TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I have to say, it's quite bright in here today, and sometimes I get a little bit nervous around so much light. Is there a reason for that?
Oh, Chris, the light, it feels so good. In fact, can we... Computer, increase illumination by 150%.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's just so bright, feels Matthew. Wonderful. Oh, my gosh. Chris, you're not loving this?
I don't think I could even see the outline. I can't do the show, Matthew. It's too bright.
Oh, I don't know why, Chris, but I'm craving light. It's like, I don't know, maybe I've been struck by some sort of light COVID or something.
I guess so. It's the light fantastic.
Yes, that it's so funny you say that because I legitimately was thinking that as an idea, a cheeky title for this. So yes,
it works well. Yes, everyone, we are going to bask in the light today as we continue with Strange New Worlds first season. This is the third episode of the series, and it's Ghosts of Illyria. Here's a quick rundown of the story. When the Enterprise visits Hedimet 9, an abandoned Illyrian colony, members of the crew begin to show signs of vitamin D deficiency and an obsession with light. Illyrians are known for their genetic engineering and are therefore shunned by the Federation. But those who once lived on this colony so wanted to become Federation members that they sought to undo their enhancements. Unbeknownst to the crew, there is an Illyrian in their midst. Only she is unable to help with the mystery. That falls on another of the Enterprise's genetically enhanced residents. Meanwhile, Dr. Mabenga has a secret. All right. So, I don't know for sure if it's another of Enterprise's genetically enhanced residents, Matthew, because I'm speaking there of La'an, and I've been thinking about her ancestry and whether or not she actually does have any sort of enhancements in reality.
Yeah, it's something that really interesting. And I think that watching this episode, I don't think that she does.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, because of the battle that she ends up having with number one, I don't see any evidence here that she does have any...
Well, it's pretty clear that she doesn't have super strength, those types of enhanced powers. But whether there are other aspects of her biology that are genetically modified, I don't know. I think we might find out as the story goes along. But the way she talks about her lineage suggests to me that there's some sort of separation and she's descended from these augments, but she is not one herself.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. She has, we learn in this episode that Khan Noonien Singh is her distant relative. And so, but that doesn't, like you said, doesn't mean that she as a character actually has any of these enhancements. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think that makes it really interesting, especially when, you know, we realize that what we learn here is that she was called augment and those kind of things, and she actually wasn't. And so I think that's really interesting to me that you have this character who has been put down because of something that she has nothing to do with. Like, she has no control over her lineage, you know, who is in her family tree. And so I think that's really fascinating. And something really important for us to remember is, like, we can't hold people responsible for things to which they have no control over, like who their ancestry was or what the color of their skin is. Like, all these things are things that nobody at all can have anything. They don't make those choices. They're just born with those things. They're just born into a family. Like, so I think that's really fascinating. And I'm glad that we're kind of like, in some ways dealing with that, because, you know, on the alternate side of that, you have Una, who is the same way. She's an Illyrian. She didn't choose to be an Illyrian. She just is one. And so being judged for being this race that obviously has been banned from the Federation because of their genetic enhancements, you know, that it's not like she had a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that's really, really fascinating here.
Right. Now, she is biologically enhanced or engineered, mm-hmm. might be a better way to describe it, because that is apparently normal for most Illyrians, if not mm-hmm. all. I don't want to say yes. all, because I don't think we've gotten enough information yet in the story to know that that would be the case, but it seems to be very right. common practice among Illyrians. And there's nothing about her that would give you that indication other than the fact that she is an Illyrian. And therefore, mm-hmm. she has hidden that fact, and she wanted to be part of Starfleet. So she hid that so that she could be there. And it really plays on human prejudice, because let's say humans, it's Starfleet, it's the Federation who mm-hmm. has put into place these rules about interacting with Illyrians. But the source of it comes from Earth with the eugenics right. wars. Therefore, it is a human prejudice here, based on mm-hmm. something that happened in our own history, and we're grafting mm-hmm. that over onto another species and
yep.
prejudging them based on something that we did in the past.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, you know, because Dr. Mbinga, when he's talking to Una, mentions this idea is that humans went to the stars and found new bigotries, and part of those bigotries really just came from their fears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those fears that in many ways, you would repeat the sins of the past kind of thing. And I think that's just fascinating to me, because what's really interesting is that we are actually scared of something because of a past mistake. There's actual foundational evidence for this quote-unquote bigotry that they have, right? And it's not necessarily bigotry in a classical sense. It's bigotry against the idea of genetic enhancement because of what's happened in human history. And to me, that's really interesting, because again, there actually is a foundation for why human beings feel like this, and why they have created this rule against anyone being in the Federation with genetic enhancements. And it makes sense, because Enterprise shows us why the other founding members would be amenable to this because of what happened with the Augment series.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of this is really well done, and it's just, it's also, it's not an easy fix. It's not an easy thing to overcome. And there's not necessarily undue reasons for actually feeling like this in the first place and having these rules. So now, whether or not there should be any leeway in that, now that's the question I think that this episode raises, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Enterprise and what happened with the augments there and how that played out in the fourth season. And it's interesting that what we know of the Illyrians on screen in what some people would consider canon, of course, you and I expand that mm-hmm. definition loosely out into the Litverse, but in Damage, we learn some of this about Illyrians and that they modified themselves in this way. And mm-hmm. as a result of the modifications, they actually, you know, their appearances can even change, mm-hmm. which I think is a convenient way of connecting Una as being an Illyrian and mm-hmm. and others. But it does tie into something that she explains late in this episode, which is that Illyrians, instead of terraforming planets, she says, they bioengineer themselves to adapt to the environment. And that would naturally mean that, sure, you know, some physical aspects of them could change as well. I thought that that was an interesting little tag at the end of this episode that ties into our real world and the reason that while we have not had a eugenics war and we don't really have augments in the sense of what we've seen with Khan and others in Star Trek, the idea that we would possibly bioengineer ourselves, we're kind of starting to do it already, but in terms of space travel, the fact that we might do that, I think is very real, because it's going to be, with our technology, I think, much easier for us to bioengineer ourselves and explore space than it is going to be to engineer space to adapt to us in the environment that we're accustomed to. So this is a case of, I think, Strange New Worlds, even though it has a retro feel to it in a TOS style, latching on to a topic that's current and will grow in importance in the years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the question of genetically altering ourselves is a massive question. And, you know, whether or not that's a good thing or not. We have that question about genetically altering our food, those kind of things, and whether that's actually a good thing or a bad thing. And, you know, I think what's fascinating is that, for the most part, I think most science fiction shows us the danger of playing God, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Khan and his ilk, the augments are the argument for not doing that, whereas the Illyrians are an argument for doing that. Which is interesting is that Denobulans are also an argument for that, too. We've already had this discussion with them, but they I don't think they ever become part of the Federation that I know of. And maybe they did, and it's grandfathered in or something, but they genetically alter themselves. Mm-hmm. Not to the extent that the Illyrians do, but they still do. So that's
just to interject before we leave that point. Denobulans are allowed to serve in Starfleet, however, whereas apparently Illyrians aren't if they reveal that they are Illyrians.
Right. And part of that, it seems to be how much they have genetically altered them. I mean, one of the things we see in this episode is that Una is stronger and faster than most human beings. I mean, she has the strength of at least, you know, probably four women.
See, I thought that was just because she's Rebecca Romijn. Are you saying it's because she's an Illyrian, like the character, or?
No, I think she's, I think that they were trying to, in that scene specifically, we're showing what some of her abilities are, because we've learned who she is at this point, and therefore now we're, the episode is allowing us to get a taste of some of the augments, basically, that she has. And so, you know, again, I think that's really interesting. And what I do kind of love about the episode is that we don't really answer the question of whether this is a good thing or not. We answer the question of whether or not number one is a good person, somebody that we should trust. But that doesn't answer the question of whether or not this is necessarily the right thing to do. And it leaves us with a big question of whether, I mean, obviously with trust, we have, number one, trusting Pike with the truth. How that plays out is going to be fascinating, because again, it's not as though the Federation does not have good reasons for saying no to this. And I would say that it's a much better reason than what we see, say, in Star Trek Picard Season 1, where they outlaw synthetics. They're similar and justifications, but the reason for what happened, you know, when humans started playing with their genome and what Khan did and the eugenics wars obviously plays. And then on top of that, with what we get with Enterprise, it's a dangerous thing to play God. And so, yes, some people, maybe the Illyrians seem to have done this right for the most part. But for every Illyrian, you know, you get a Khan Noonien Singh and, you know, other, you get basically the Jem'Hadar, right? Yeah. Like, you get people genetically engineering people to just be warriors and stuff. So,
right.
Like, yeah. What I love is that this is not an easily answered question, and we're kind of left, as we talked about last week, for the audience to start to try and just ponder these issues rather than being like, no, this is the answer.
Right. Well, it illustrates how with science, knowledge can be used for good and it can be used for bad. The same knowledge can be applied in different ways. And so you mentioned the Jem'Hadar. It's a great example of how bioengineering can be used simply to breed warriors, which is actually something that some people on Earth today are interested in doing as well. You know, engineering soldiers to endure the battlefield longer than normal humans would, which is a frightening thing. And I think that things like that, and then within the context of the Star Trek universe, the eugenics wars, show how whatever rules are in place and whatever the exceptions are, I imagine they're actually rather complex in an organization like the Federation, but they've been put into place because of something that has happened, and they probably evolved over a long period of time. Whereas the banning of synthetics in Picard season one that you mentioned, I think was meant to illustrate the knee-jerk reactions that we have in our world today, where something comes up and someone is frightened by it, and the reaction is to just shut it all down, because let's not actually consider the situation. Let's just react.
Right. Well, and there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom. You know, knowledge is just knowledge, but wisdom is what helps us to rightly apply knowledge. And therefore, as we can see, Starfleet as an organization and the Federation have decided, because of all of the data, all of the experience that has been had with genetic engineering, the wisdom is to outlaw that, because the bad outweighs the good that can come from it. So I think that's interesting. And yet, something I wanted to bring to you that I think is really interesting. So Dr. Mbenga is keeping his daughter alive in the pattern buffer because a disease that she has not been able to be cured yet. Remember in Star Trek Picard, the Rikers lose their son because medical technology is outlawed in the Federation because it's synthetic android based. So my thought is that this show seems to continually be revolving around genetic engineering.
Yeah.
Will we come to the point where it's going to be something like Illyrian technology that's going to be the thing that can save Mbenga's daughter's life? And that's going to be the kind of the pinnacle of the season. It's something that really struck me, how it connects with what we've seen in Picard, but we're telling this story here. We've got all these, you know, genetically engineered characters and or like history with genetic and engineering. It just seems to be a big thing that we've been talking about a lot in Star Trek recently.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Of course, prior to the middle of this episode, we had never even thought about Mbenga having a daughter and having her stored in a pattern buffer or anything like that. It could be that Illyrian bioengineering will somehow eventually be applied to Pike, which would allow him to survive the accident that he has seen in his own future. You could go that route.
And the beauty of this, too, is that And something that you had brought up in our outline, which is phenomenal, is we dealt with this issue in Deep Space Nine with Dr. Bashir.
Right. Yeah.
And as well as the other genetically altered human beings who did not turn out like Bashir. So for every Bashir, there was one of them and or somebody more like a Khan, Nooni, and Singh. Bashir was the very rare exception to the type of genetic engineering that could be so dangerous. So I love that, again, Star Trek is dealing with these issues because it is something more to where we actually are seeing people begin to play with their biology in a way that has not really been studied, and yet they're doing it. And is it a good thing for them or a bad thing? We don't really know because there hasn't. We're just making people guinea pigs at this point, and that's a dangerous place to be when we are putting lives on the line.
Well, we're making people guinea pigs in some cases, but in other cases, yes, people are making themselves guinea pigs because
this is true too. You're
they
absolutely
want
right.
To have
100%.
Enhancement. You know, I've heard of people embedding RFID tags under their skin, for example, which I don't think would necessarily be a good thing to do, but they're right. Curious about it. The fact that we deal with this in Deep Space Nine with Dr. Bashir, and of course, this is where when you're actually writing stories like this and you're writing events that happened before others many years later, you have to kind of make all the pieces fit together. But if we just try to stay in universe and we think that the fact that we deal with this with Dr. Bashir and we see what happens in Deep Space Nine and the position that the Federation has at that time about genetic engineering, and then we see some years later at the beginning of the 25th century, season one Picard, the reaction to synthetics, and we see what is going on now in this episode, it does seem that the Federation never gets over this fear of genetic engineering, and it never loosens its laws. It never softens its position on this, because if it did, the Dr. Bashir situation couldn't happen. Now, it's possible right. that it softens for a while, and then it goes back to being stricter again. That's certainly possible. That's how laws work in the real world. But if Illyrian genetic engineering technology is somehow worked into the story to where it can help others and it can be accepted, I think that that starts to make the overall timeline, the things that we know about Federation positions, a little bit muddier. And in many cases, I don't mind playing around with the creative like that. This is a really big topic that would be, it would take a lot right. of, a lot more effort than you can put into a television episode to explain it. It would take probably
sure.
multiple novels, right? And then maybe you could do something interesting with it.
Well, I think you're 100% right. I mean, just with you know, the way this episode wraps up is so quick, so we don't really get a chance to deal with much more than kind of the fallout for number one herself, you know, and the way she's feeling personally. As for the larger questions, those are still there. And I think one of the things that's quite interesting is that Star Trek has continually kind of shown that this question does kind of raise every once in a while in the Federation, and the reasons that they continue to ban it continue to be because it's so up in the air as a technology. It's not a science to which can be made to actually affect the outcomes that it desires consistently to be able to put a stamp on it, say, yes, we think this is safe for everyone. No, what we see is this is actually safe for very few people because, again, and again, I hate to keep saying it, but it's a playing God thing, and we're not meant to do that. So It's what I, again, I really got to give it to them for not, they pull at your heartstrings with number one, but we're still left with a lot of questions because number one even raises it. What would happen if I hadn't been the catalyst for saving everyone? It's a good question. And it's there's a lot of ambiguity there. So it's really well done, I think.
Yeah. Let's transition for a minute and just talk about the story itself, like the plot itself, because this is another case where I don't know how they're doing it, and maybe it's only me who's feeling this way, or me and a few other people, but it's like they've somehow figured out how to capture the plots of the original series and make them work now, because I can totally see the Enterprise in the original series going to a planet where everybody on the ship is starting to act weird and get sick, and then we find out that it's because
we've seen that before.
The virus moves on light, and if you stay in the dark, you're okay. And the clue is that people don't have enough vitamin D. It's it's like it's a much more simplistic plot than we often get in stories these days. And it certainly, as they resolve it, it certainly has shades of The Next Generation. But the plot itself, I can completely see Dr. McCoy trying to solve this.
Yes.
The line, actually, where not only the realization that vitamin D is an issue, but Mbinga responds to number one when she says that we should do a lockdown. And Mbinga says, given the alternative, I think it's the best option. And the way he delivers it sounded like Bones to me. I could just completely hear McCoy giving that line. And so somehow they're really capturing the spirit of TOS for me.
Yes. I know. I 100% agree with you. I think you rightly call that out. And I think that's what's made the show work so far is because of that. So well done to them for having kind of figured out a formula. And part of that, I think, is because they've realized, you know, you can have continuity between episodes and have an ongoing story without having a universe ending threat every 5 seconds.
And
part of this is this show has been about exploring the characters to which we're getting to know, like Pike in number one, and Dr. Mbinga in, you know, La'an, and on and on and on, which is phenomenal. Like, we're actually getting a ton. You've, you know, complained about some of the things in Discovery, which is the frustration of not really getting to know the characters because we're so focused on plot all the time. And this is the complete opposite of that. And I think it's what's making it really work. And so I 100% agree with you that this feels like the original series, which it was one of the strengths of the original series, that you had these plots that were, you know, they were trying to say something, but at the same time, they were just helping you know these characters more. And I think in the end, that's what people fell in love with Star Trek in the first place, was characters. Not necessarily specific life-altering stories. And so it's been really well done. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is a hallmark of this show so far, to which it's not as concerned about the plot as it is about trying to help us understand characters better. And, you know, in all honesty, it shows, because, I mean, the end of the episode and the resolution to the plot is very simplistic. And that's not necessarily a terrible thing, although I do think I could have used a little less medical babble.
Right. Okay, we'll get to the medical babble in just a moment. I just want to add that, yeah, it shows that having a simplistic plot can allow you to discuss an issue and convey a message more effectively than having this overly complex plot that requires you to do so many things that you don't even have time to actually get to know the characters. Now, to be fair, the original series was not good at telling us a lot about all of the characters. It was very much Kirk, Spock, McCoy, a little bit of Scotty, and a lot less of Chekhov, Sulu, and Uhura. But you still felt like you knew Chekhov, Sulu, and Uhura.
Right.
And certainly Scotty, even though they, you know, it's not Deep Space Nine, right? It's not everybody is in
there. Well, nothing has ever been Deep Space Nine, so.
right. But so far on this show, even Ortega so far hasn't had a lot to do, but I still feel like I know her. Like, I know what her personality's like. She's off doing some things on her own. And speaking of her, there's another TOS moment in here that really goes by when she's heading down the corridor and she finds Ensign Lance there taking off his uniform up against the wall. Over the PA system, you hear an announcement for Yeoman Rand, which really I didn't pick up on the first time through, but I like that they're throwing those little things in there.
Well, and on top of that, I think we've got to just, you rightly called out earlier, this is an episode that could have happened on The Next Generation or on the original series. And it's the whole thing of people get sick. And, you know, here it's light COVID. That's basically what they're playing off of. You know, I mean, we get contact tracing and lockdowns. And I mean, it's everything that we lived through, but in a... It wasn't one of those things where you're like, oh, God, I don't want to be reminded of that. It was just, it was more classic kind of Star Trek where, you know, we went to a planet, we picked up a virus, and now everybody's going nuts, which Star Trek has done many, many times. So.
Right. And the story proves what Carl Urban's McCoy said. Space is disease and danger wrapped in darkness and silence. Although maybe not completely silence here. We did get some shrieking from the colonists.
Yes, we did.
But it does show that space is a dangerous place. There's a lot of disease and danger out there.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I really do hope this has nothing to do with the episode. I really hope they make another one of those movies because Carl Urban's bones deserves another film.
He does. He is fantastic. Fantastic. All right. Let's talk about one other character for a minute. That's Hemmer. We finally got to see a bit more of him here. He talks a bit more in this episode. And I'm starting to feel like he's Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock. He's a genius and he knows it. And he doesn't have any patience for anyone else who can't figure this stuff out already.
I like him. I think he's very funny so far. And he's enjoyable to spend time with. And I'm hoping to get to spend more time with him as a character because of that. And I'm really interested to see, because I think you rightly called out that he kind of feels like a Sherlock type character, especially Benedict Cumberbatch's version. Who might be his Watson to play off of? That'll be an interesting question to see. And, you know, I mean, is it going to be somebody like number one? I don't know. Would be great, though. I think we just need to see more of this character because he's really funny.
He is. I have liked him quite a bit so far.
One thing, Chris, that I did want to mention and I thought was kind of beautiful in the episode, we see in the actions of a couple of characters. One is that Pike offers Una grace for the lie that she's told. And then Una turns around and offers Dr. Mbenga grace for the lie that he is told. And I thought that that was beautiful, especially because both of these people have told these lies for protection reasons, protection of themselves and of others. And, you know, obviously Una's is more about herself and Benga's is much more about his daughter, but it's not for nefarious purposes. And again, that grace being offered, I thought was really beautiful because I feel like we live in such a graceless world that it just felt like something refreshing to see in an episode of Star Trek. And I just wanted to call it out because I thought it was well done. And I'm glad that they went that direction. Because again, I think that's something of the best of Star Trek's example. You know, the best of Star Trek is something that shows us that we all deserve basically a second chance.
Yeah, that's a great thing to point out. And well said. So, any final thoughts on this episode? And what rating do you give this one?
Yeah, this one, you know, it was another really good episode. I thought, you know, like we said, it's continuing that feel of TOS, which is fantastic. And I'm just enjoying being with this crew. I'm enjoying being on this Enterprise, getting to spend a little bit more time in engineering. I think it's a beautiful design. You know, it harkens all the way back to things that we've seen like in Picard, but then it feels also like it's drawing on things from TOS. And it's just those type of things that it's really working for me, this show. And so I'm going to give this 3.75 out of 5 holographic suns because, you know, yeah, you know, connecting with COVID and everything, it was, I could have maybe done without, but in the end, it was a very classic episode. And I was very thankful that we took the opportunity to get to know the character of Number One, really give her some weight, her connection with La'an, her connection with the captain, and I just can't wait to see what happens next with the show, which is phenomenal. You know, hey, Chris, for 2 for 2 right now with, you know, Picard and now Strange New Worlds. So let's keep it going. And now, as I say that, I'm really excited to kind of hear, what do you rate this episode yourself?
Well, you might get your wish with what comes next, because there could be a steady stream of new Star Trek series spinning off of all this stuff the way it looks.
Well, I don't know if I just want us to keep dumping Star Trek on us, but
yeah, right.
Yeah, at least these two series, and specifically Picard season 2 and now this season so far, it's been good. So let's just keep that trend up.
yeah. And I also noticed that your rating, of course, is based on 5. And I noticed that level 5 is very important in this episode, because not only do they run a level 5 diagnostic, they then do a level 5 lockdown. So
yes,
maybe on this Enterprise, 5 is max, I guess.
Yes, it can only be a 5. You can't go above. So they're doing on the warp 5 scale.
Okay. So. All right. It's just like a little homage to Enterprise again, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
So yeah, my thoughts on the episode are, it, as I said, it really felt like an original series episode. It had a bit of a TNG exploration of the problem. I like that it was not overly complex, straightforward, and it allowed them to really talk about an issue, which is why today you and I spent most of our discussion talking about the genetic engineering angle rather than the plot, what's happening. We didn't even talk about Pike and Spock down on the planet because that was not a key part of the story. And I also liked that. I liked the fact that Pike can step back and we can have this episode that's driven by Number One and other characters on the ship, and both Pike and Spock can step into the background. So it's not a show that has to be driven by one person. It doesn't right. have to all be about Pike, which is something that maybe we were a little bit concerned about in the beginning. Was it just going to be a show about Pike trying to come to terms with his future? But no, it's not like that. I did find it a little bit odd that the chief medical officer could hide their daughter in the pattern buffer on a starship without anyone knowing it. That makes me ask questions about Starfleet security, but it works for the story.
This is true. Right. This is true.
It works for the story. So that was okay. So I'm going to give this one, I think I'll give it 8 vitamin D tablets.
Nice.
Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Ghosts of Elyria. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our group for listeners. If you're already a member, you know how it works. But if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And it's a great way to extend the conversation beyond the podcast. That's why it's there. So you'll see a post for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and with Matthew and me right there in the comments. You can also send us email if you prefer. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and it'll come right on over to us by Pony Express. And of course, you can find us in social media, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM, and we would love to hear from you there. And also, if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave ratings and reviews, we would love to get that from you as well. Let us know what you think about the show. That'll help other people find it and decide if they want to listen. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Now, Matthew, when you're not busy arming yourself with knowledge, where can people find you?
Well, not just knowledge, but wisdom. You can also find me all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02, which I'm not quite sure if social media is the place to find wisdom. It's not, but find me there anyway. You can also find me, of course, here on the network in the 602 Club, our whole other side of the network that's not devoted to Star Trek, because we talk a lot of Star Trek. So that means we got to talk all the other fandoms we love. So check that out. You can also find me on Literary Treks, The Orb, Warp 5, and The Artificial Tango. Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Warp 5, Chris, you and I are walking through Enterprise, celebrating the 20th anniversary. Every episode, we're in season 2 now. It's a lot of fun. The Orb, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, our great love, and of course, The Artificial Tango, as we talked about Star Trek Picard Season 2. And then I'm over on the Nerd Party Network. You'll find me doing a couple of shows. One's a completed show with Drea Kaufman, as we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then over on Aggressive Negotiations, John Mills and I talk about Star Wars. Now, Chris, when you're not, hanging out in this incredible, eatery here on this new Enterprise, having some strawberries, where can people find you?
I do love strawberries. They're my comfort food, thanks to Una. When I'm not eating strawberries, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, those shows that you and I do together, The Orb, Warp 5, The Artificial Tango. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and there's Interphase, and then I'm in all sorts of episodes in the back catalog. So check those out if you want to hear me talk more about Star Trek. You can also find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. That is my username everywhere in social media. Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. If you'd like to help us keep this show and everything that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. And we thank everyone who is supporting us there right now. We would not be here without you. So thank you so very, very much. Well, Matthew, I'm curious to find out what we have in store for us next week. I think we're going to get another episode focused on one of our characters, and let's see who it's going to be.
Well, Chris, that sounds fantastic, so saddle up and lock and load.